You're listening to Bariatric Life Podcast, a podcast about weight loss surgery. Chris and I are not doctors, nor have we ever played one on TV. We are sharing our personal views and opinions only. Please always follow your doctor's advice. Follow us on Instagram at Bariatric Life Podcast and at Amanda's VSG. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We are so excited to announce a new partnership with Titan Nutrition. They have proteins, vitamins, pre-workouts, and superfoods. Their proteins come in flavors like peanut butter fudge and snickerdoodle.
Snickerdoodle's my favorite.
And they have 24 grams of protein.
Go to titannutrition.net and use code BARIATRICLIFE for 10% off your order and get free shipping. Again, that is titannutrition.net. And discount code Bariatric Life, all one word.
Hello, and welcome to Bariatric Life Podcast. This is Amanda.
And this is Chris.
And today we are talking with Pamela, a food addiction counselor. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So let's start with you did have weight loss surgery, right?
I did, yes.
Which surgery did you have and when did you have it?
So I had a mini gastric bypass. I don't know what makes it mini, but that's what it's called.
I've always heard that myself.
I don't know. I think it's essentially a gastric bypass. And about 3 years ago now.
And how much did you lose?
100 pounds, give or take. Up, you know, it's around that much. My weight is pretty stable, but it goes up and down, but approximately 100 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you have any complications with your surgery?
No, everything was super smooth. You know, like the regular recovery, but overall, no, very smooth process.
That's good.
Yeah.
Why'd you pick that specific procedure?
Well, I guess I don't know statistically that there's a huge variance between the two procedures. To me, it felt like, I know that some people have revision from the sleeve to the bypass. And I was like, I don't want there to be any other possibility of a surgery. I want, like, I'm like burning the ships, you know, like I'm going to do, like, this is going to be my, I'm putting all my chips in, right? Like, and I actually did have sort of a meltdown the day before. And I remember speaking to my surgeon, like saying, I don't know if I made the right decision. Maybe I should not be doing, you know, maybe I should have a sleeve. And he was kind of like, well, if it was my daughter, I would recommend that she does this. And so I was like, okay. You know, that was my thought process.
And then did you have any health conditions improve since your surgery?
You know, my overall health has just improved greatly. So things like pain in my feet and pain in my knees are gone completely. By the end, like by my surgery date, I was never tested, but I'm sure I had sleep apnea. Like it was hard for me to sleep on my back. You know, that's just completely finished, like just gone. Everything's just so much easier now. Sorry if this is TMI, but my periods are more regulated. And so
that has been a common theme that we've heard.
Yeah.
Greatly helps regulate periods and especially for women that weren't, I guess, regular or consistent.
Yeah. So I think it's one of the coolest experiences is I've always exercised. And it's just such a cool experience to know what it's like to exercise with a variance of 100 pounds. It's just so cool. It's always like, wow, this is so easy now. Like, it just feels so great, you know? Like, wow, this is so, this feels so good compared to what it used to feel like, you know?
No. What was the biggest hurdle that you faced while you, after your surgery?
Well, I mean, it sort of leads into what I'm doing now, but first, by far the biggest hurdle is the fact that there's a honeymoon period and the honeymoon period ends. And so, you know, I'm sure this is, I know how many people are struggling with the fact that you get to sort of this low weight, your lowest weight. And often you start noticing your bad habits creeping back. And all of a sudden you're able to eat more. And then you're able to eat more and you're able to eat more. And you, you know, maybe let foods that you hadn't been eating, you start eating them again. And, oh, it would be nice if you, they made you so sick that you decided never to eat them again. But I personally don't know anybody who's had that experience, especially long term. And, you know, you realize that all your issues that you had before surgery still exist about, you know, a year post-surgery. So that by far was the biggest struggle.
Yeah. So how did that lead into the food addiction counseling?
So, you know, the reason why I am maintaining my weight loss without question is because I adopted a program of food addiction recovery. So, you know, I sort of identified trigger foods that are big no-nos for me that I no longer eat. And I have a program of connection, of spiritual fulfillment, of, you know, different kind of activities that I know, you know, sort of fill my bucket that are non-negotiables, routines, morning and evening routines, like all these things that are really as much part of my weight loss as what I eat. And that really is the reason why I'm maintaining my weight. The surgery is very helpful. It's a great tool, but without question, I would be gaining without that. And I was walking down the street one day and I remember thinking to myself, how do I make sure that I don't ever go back to my life prior? Because I was not just overweight, but I was, you know, like we talked about, physically not so well and definitely mentally not well. I was very depressed. I self-isolated, you know, I just was in a dark place. And I just remember thinking, you know, I'm going to make this my whole life. And it was very selfish sort of motives. But at the same time, I recognize that there are so many people in the same position that didn't find the information in the same way that I did. And so I'm like, I feel like, yes, the motives were sort of selfish, but I really feel like they are for the greater good, because a lot of people are going to benefit from the knowledge that there is a treatment for food addiction. And, you know, the surgery is helpful, but ultimately, if you are addicted to these ultra processed foods or sugars or whatever it is, that you do need a different kind of diet program than the rest of the people, the population.
So what kind of education did it take for you to become a counselor?
So, you know, a lot of what I know is really from my own experiences. So I've been through, you know, different food addiction programs, you know, from OA to OA House. There's a lot of like these free kind of programs that probably some of your listeners are familiar with, FA, there's CEO How, and then also I am familiar with Brightline Eating. And I just became obsessed personally. Like, I have, you know, listened to every podcast, read every book, you know, so I lived this for years, and that's where a lot of my knowledge comes from. But also, there might be one or two sort of professionals in the field that have their own accreditation program, but that's by far the biggest one comes out of Iceland. It's called the InFact School. It's an international school that is currently online, and they offer certification and as a food addiction professional. So that's where I did my official certification.
Awesome. How long did it take to do that?
It's about an 8-month course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what all does it entail?
So you learn about the science behind food addiction. So what is happening physiologically, biologically in your brain. And you learn about different treatment modalities. And that school in particular places a lot of emphasis on sort of the 12-step model of recovery. So I delved deep into sort of 12-step work, which I think is very interesting. Yeah, and it was just really great because it's such a small field. So our teachers and our lecturers are like the groundbreaking scientists in the field of food addiction. So it was great in that way. And also it was just a really, it was also like a journey of self-discovery because, you know, like I am, you know, I walk the walk. I don't just talk the talk, right? So, you know, it was a really nice community of happened to be all women in the course. And so we definitely shared our own journeys and it was very fulfilling in that way also personally.
Do you know if there's any movement toward having food addiction being recognized by the DSM?
Yes, there's definitely a push for it. I think there's also a very strong push back because as you can imagine, the food industry, which is, you know, huge industry, doesn't want it recognized because then they would have to take some responsibility for the obesity epidemic and all the correlating health crises that are going on. So it's not something that big industry is really keen to acknowledge, but there is currently a push happening. I see a lot of parallels between, you know, the tobacco industry and sort of the big food industry right now. And so I think, you know, it will be recognized in time. There's definitely pushback.
Yeah. So what, if you're able to give like a short synopsis, I know this is probably not possible.
It's a very loaded question.
Yeah. But how does the science of food addiction work?
So, yeah. Well, one thing that I'll say is that I just put together a webinar. So if people aren't, can I just
absolutely.
Yes. I'm just gonna promote myself a little bit. So I hope to run it, you know, maybe like on a monthly basis, completely free. So if anybody's interested, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook. And I have a Facebook group that's specifically for bariatric food addiction recovery support. So if you're just curious or if you just are looking for more support, you can join that group. Anyways, within that group is a webinar on the science of food addiction. So that's actually coming up, I believe. I don't know when you're airing this, but I believe February 14th. So if this airs before that, you can join. Otherwise, maybe there'll be a replay or just stay tuned for another, for the next webinar. But anyways, yes. So essentially, you know, when we eat these ultra processed foods, they affect our dopamine response. So these foods, if you look at like, you know, strawberry ice cream is going to release, you know, much, much, much more dopamine than a natural strawberry that we would find, you know, growing in the ground. Eventually, our body sort of regulates to these high stream of dopamine until we need more and more and more. And our when we have like sort of a regular baseline level of dopamine, it feels bad, right? Like, so we have this really bad feeling because we've downregulated to the amount of dopamine that we're used to in our systems. And there's a part of the brain that becomes affected by this that's not our rational brain. Like, it's not our frontal lobe that can make good decisions that says, you know what, salads are great. It's almost like it's the survival part of the brain, like the real primitive part of the brain. And it is feeling like it's not getting what it needs. It's almost like the fight or flight, the survival mechanism comes into place. And that's why these cravings are so overwhelming, because it's coming from this real survival instinct in our brain. And so until we sort of recalibrate our hormones and the dopamine, our cravings become very, very overwhelming and really our common sense is hijacked by this, you know, more primitive brain part that is gains control in those times. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was just sitting here thinking, like, that is a great way of describing it, because I think it is a, hey, I'm used to having this happy chemical at this level, and now I don't. So clearly something's wrong. We need to take immediate action because something is wrong, not necessarily, you know, oh, well, this is lower than normal, but everything's okay. Like, I could totally see how that would activate that fight or flight sense.
Yeah. And people, I mean, maybe you've experienced something like that where, you know, it's like, you know better, you know, like, people are very people who struggle with food addiction, who struggle with obesity. I mean, those two are two different things, I should point out. They're intelligent, they're motivated, they're successful, and yet they're not able to deal with, like, this part of their life. You know, the eating is out of control despite, you know, high intelligence and high motivation. And so understanding that and understanding the tool, like what you need to do to overcome it, is really, really game changing. And what I just want to say is that your brain will recalibrate. So, you know, you will be able to sort of re-level things out where you're not, where you, the cravings are no longer overwhelming. So that's, like, the good news.
Right. No, they're still there, but they're controllable. They're manageable.
They certainly can come, especially because we use food for so many reasons. We use food for celebration and for, you know, emotional regulation and for relaxation, all these things. So, you know, but once our, you know, our base dopamine levels sort of re-regulate, those overwhelming cravings really sort of go away, which is, like, pretty amazing.
So how does one define food addiction?
So there is, there are standardized tests. So before I start working with clients, I would always do an assessment to sort of not only see if they would, qualify as having food addiction or a substance use disorder, the substance being food, but also just to see where they land on the scale of food addiction and which aspects of food addiction are most salient for them. But essentially, like, just in layperson's terms, you know, you need to look at your eating. Do you often eat more than you think that you should or that you want to? And do you ever, like, do you feel like you want to stop, but you can't? And are the negative effects of your eating getting in the way of your life? If so, you probably have food addiction issues.
Let me try that again. What are the parallels to, like, substance use addiction?
I mean, they're exactly the same. Really, it's like, you know, if you look at, like, you know, alcoholism, you might say, somebody might say, I'm only going to have one glass of wine, you know, or somebody might say, I'm only going to have one piece of cake. But instead, you start with one glass and you finish two bottles, or you start with one piece of cake and you finish the cake and then go back for, like, the pint of ice cream, right? So, mm-hmm. And then, you know, you say, oh man, I'm never doing that again. That was terrible. I'm never going to do that again. And then the next day you do the same thing, you know, and then maybe you're supposed to do X, Y, or Z, but you feel so sick that you can't do those things. You know, the parallels are exact. I mean, maybe not exact, but they're, you know, it would be the same descriptors.
The reason I asked was I work with in an intensive outpatient program, and the questions that you were asking about food addiction are very similar, if not the same, to what we ask during assessments for substance use disorder.
Yeah, it's the same. Yep.
Well, and, like, if you think about it too, so, like, alcohol affects the brain, it affects the chemical interactions in the brain, just as the dopamine and serotonin being released when you have that piece of cake or the eclair or, you know, whatever your food of choice was. Like, I can totally see how it is all just chemical interactions in the brain and where is that chemical coming from is basically the only difference.
Yeah. And I feel really grateful that I suffer from food addiction. I can put down, you know, alcohol after a glass. I can identify when I've had too much and I need to stop. I've never had any problems with any other substances. I just don't have it in me. But a lot of people, you know, their addictions transfer from one thing to another, you know, and that's really interesting. Especially I know that after bariatric surgery, transfer addictions really something can be problematic for people. So yes, it's the same sort of systems within the brain. Yes. But, you know, people have different reactions to different substances. I don't really know why. I think maybe there's a genetic component, but yeah.
Do you think people are less likely to seek help for a food addiction as opposed to like alcoholism? Do you feel like people think, oh, alcoholism is a disease, but food addiction is just a character flaw I have, and so I'm less likely to seek help?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think, you know, I appreciate the way you said that people interpret, you know, weight issues or eating issues as character flaws or, you know, a moral flaw. And yes, and I think part of that is sort of the diet culture that exists in our society. I think a lot of people let's be honest, in some ways, the repercussions of food addictions are not always as serious as with other drugs. They're not as serious or as obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Although people who I see who come to me are often, you know, they're suffering quite substantially. I also think that a lot of people, from my, you know, experience, they often, you know, see themselves as, you know, the other in their family. So if they come from a family that, you know, has a lot of substance use within it, like a lot of alcoholism, they don't, then they often pride themselves on not being part of that, you know, addictive cycle, not drinking or not doing the drugs. And so it's hard for them to recognize that they also have an addictive issue because they haven't, you know, because they've always positioned themselves as sort of the one that didn't have an issue. Of course, their issue is just food and it's not as widely recognized. And I think the lack of recognition for food addiction, actually, a lot of people would argue that it doesn't exist. It's really damaging. It's really damaging because people are suffering and they're not able to get the help that they need.
So what does treatment look like?
So on one hand, I mean, people always like to talk about, you know, the food and the meal planning and that kind of situation. So definitely it includes getting rid of the addictive substances. And those substances can vary from person to person. Generally, what we're talking about is sugar and flour and any ultra processed foods. So we're talking about like the chips and the Oreos and all these, you know, irresistible snacks that come from a lab. And different people have different triggers. And I really find that food addiction exists sort of on a scale from sort of mild to more severe. So, you know, some people can just really remove, you know, sugar and maybe, you know, again, these ultra processed foods, and they can really go on their merry way and be like, wow, I feel so much better now. This is great. And some people need a much more structured food plan, which maybe, you know, their triggers might be more varied. So for example, for some people, nuts can be a problem. For some people, cheese can be a problem where they take one bite and they can't stop. And then that spirals into more and more food. And then some people even have a very structured plan of eating where they have weighed and measured meals every day. So, and that can be a really useful tool for some people. But that's just one part of recovery. So if you know, it sounds like you know a little bit about addiction treatment. Really, we need a community of support. That's partly why I created this Facebook group, so people can come together and feel part of community and feel like they're not alone and also lean on each other. And also practices that are really going to fill the hole that they previously filled by, you know, with by eating. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a spiritual practice, maybe it's meditation, maybe it's, you know, communing with nature or finding ways of really making themselves feel okay. You know, when I am meditating or I'm exercising or I'm, you know, playing piano or doing something fun for myself, that's not like, I take these things very seriously because they are necessary for me to, you know, stay on a healthy path, because otherwise I get too depleted and things can really spiral for me.
What does, as part of the treatment plan, what would, what signs should people, I really can't.
Yeah, take your time.
Out. I'm sorry.
You're doing great.
What signs should people be on the lookout for as far as like withdrawal, and what can be done to help and ease those withdrawal symptoms?
Yeah, so withdrawal is definitely a real thing. And I always say, like, if you can, just take it easy for a few days and limit the demands on yourself, right? Like, don't try to also be working out and also be like, you know, who knows, planning a big presentation for work. And all, like, if you can, take it really easy, drink lots of nice warm tea, watch a movie, like, just really, like, take it easy on yourself, you know, let your significant other know that you might not be in a very good mood. And just give it a few days, because the withdrawal is a good thing. I know, you know, there are some supplements that people say help, but for me, I just feel like take it easy. Accept that you might not feel great. And that's something that's not easy for somebody who's a food addict. I think distress tolerance is something that is a challenge to many people who have constantly, you know, medicated any bad feeling with food. So, you know, be ready for not feeling great, accept it, lean into support, and just like be gentle with yourself for a few days. That's the best advice that I have.
How does 12-step work go into the treatment?
So when I work with clients, I don't follow I don't specifically follow the 12-step model, but I think that so many elements of the 12 steps are like, you know, healthy mindsets that really are like basic good mental health practices, like forgiveness, like taking responsibility for your actions, like, you know, connecting to something greater than yourself. You know, doing, being of service, all these things are, you know, to me, just like basic tenets of healthy psychology. So, you know, certainly the 12-step programs have helped so many people. And I would even recommend, you know, even when I see clients, like, go to meetings if that resonates with you, like, because from a connection standpoint, they're very useful. But I don't, not everybody resonates with this, the way that the 12 steps, you know, are laid out. Not everybody really finds a sponsor that they connect with. Not everybody connects with the, you know, God in the way that the 12 step programs, you know, sort of ask of you. So I think I think they're great, and I encourage people to explore. Myself, I don't follow them. I don't follow the 12 steps in my treatment plans exactly, but like I said, they're very useful. You know, the word is gone for me, but they're very useful. You know, there's definitely gems there that are, I think, universal.
Sorry, long pause. So what else is there to kind of like tips or good information to pass along?
Yeah, so I think if somebody is curious about this, like, I find it when I talk to people about food addiction, by the time that somebody's coming to talk to me, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm a food addict, you know, like, but, you know, so if you're kind of curious about it, then I would say, you know, follow me on Instagram, watch my videos, see if it resonates with you. I think what I recommend for people who go into treatment is to give it 2 weeks. You know, give it 2 weeks. And what I find after, and when I say give it 2 weeks, I mean cut out the sugar, cut out the processed foods for 2 weeks. And what I find very frequently is that people are like, wow, I'm never going back. You know, like they really feel a difference in their body and in their ability to, you know, stop binging behaviors that they have been struggling with for years and years and years. So that's, I mean, I think that's worth giving 2 weeks into. And like the thing with addiction is that it's so difficult and it's so hard and it's so soul sucking and life sucking. And then if you can get into recovery in a strong program of recovery, you really can elevate your life. And that's the message that I always like to leave people with, is that this is not a message of, oh, woe is me. And not a message of like, oh, this is what I can't have anymore. And this is what I can't do anymore. It's like, no, look where I've gotten because I've recognized what my issues are and dealt with them. And now my life is elevated. Like I am self-employed. I love my job. I experience more joy than I ever have. You know, I'm like in great physical condition, all these things. And it really comes out of recovery. And so I really like to leave people with that message, that this is really a message of hope.
I like that. And like 2 weeks isn't that long. Like you can do anything for 2 weeks.
Yeah, especially with support, right? Especially when you're like, you have people cheering you on, you're doing things together, you know, you have people checking in on you. So yeah, for sure.
And the support, I think, is absolutely critical. I mean, you can't be on an island by yourself and trying to be successful in overcoming an addiction like that. You need people you want to be recognized as having made positive improvements, and you can't just recognize yourself and like you've got to have that support system.
I would say it's almost impossible to do it on your own, really.
Yeah.
And one of the services that I offer, that I think is one of the most valuable things that I offer, is like a daily check-in for people.
Mm-hmm.
So every single day I'm expecting an email from you where we're checking in, seeing how your day's gone, looking at what the positives have been, looking at what your goals for the next day are. You know, if there were any tricky parts, then we can troubleshoot those parts. And it's just like knowing that there's somebody waiting to hear if you've stuck to your plan. And I really think that that's one of the most valuable tools that I offer to my clients. And people, there's a really positive response to that as well. Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
So like a positive reinforcement, but an ultimate accountability as well.
Yes, exactly.
So where can people find you on Facebook and Instagram and on the interwebs?
Yeah. So my name is Pamela, weird last name, blame my husband, M-E-K-U, and I'll say Z for the Americans. I would say Z because I'm in Canada. So Pamela Mekuz. My company is Life is Sweet Counseling. So you can look me up at www.lifeissweetcounseling.com. You can see my offerings, which are basically one-on-one counseling right now. I have the daily accountability. At some point, there is a 10-week course up there. I am not sure exactly when I'll be offering that. I also have my webinars, which you can find in my Life is Sweet Counseling Facebook group for bariatric food addiction support. And on Instagram, Pamela_Mekuz. I'm in all the places and I love to hear from people. So, you know, feel free to reach out and let me know what kind of content you're interested in, because I like to make my content useful. And I feel, you know, I'm at the beginning of my career, so people have a lot of access to me. So I really recommend for people to take advantage of it, you know?
That sounds awesome. We have really enjoyed chatting with you. This has been so informative.
I have been looking forward to this one for several days.
Thank you so much. It's really great connecting with you too. It's been so much fun. You guys are great, and be in touch.
Of course. Sounds you have good. A great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.